agenda. All right. Today we have one item on the agenda, and it's the presentation by the Department of Education on the state of our assessment developments. I think one of the most important topics that we can talk about when it comes to education policy is this whole issue of accountability. All right, and what are we holding people accountable for, and how are we doing that? And so therefore this whole realm of statewide assessments, which is a fairly new concept in the grand scheme of things in the state of Minnesota, is both important and appropriate for our committee to be discussing. So I've talked to the Department of Education and simply asked to give us a briefing on this whole area, where we at, where we come from, and some thoughts on where we're going. I know a number of members of the legislature, if not just this committee, have also expressed thoughts and concerns when it comes to assessments, even looking at assessments in different ways, and I'm sure most of you have had conversations with people about the concepts of value-added assessments, the concepts of performance-based assessments versus knowledge-based assessments. So all of those issues are fundamental policy issues that are appropriate for this committee to examine. And so today is just a background on where we are in the state of Minnesota and to give you members the opportunity to ask questions. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce two members, Mr. Tim Van Sickle and Ms. Pat Olson, who are here to present for the Department of Education. Welcome to the committee, and please give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Patricia Olson. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Accountability and Improvement at the Department of Education. I'd like to thank you first for the opportunity to share with you some of the what we feel are exciting things happening in the world of assessment in the state of Minnesota. The past year, we think we've made a great deal of headway in listening to what the folks in the field were saying, were the weaknesses and desires as far as the MCAs, for example, better reporting. We've opened up communication. We've brought in as many constituents as we can and involved them in different areas of assessment. Assessment is always complicated, and it's been shrouded in mystery. We're trying to bring it out in the open as much as we can. We'd like to share with you today a little bit of where we're heading, and also to answer any questions you may have. As you said, Mr. Chairman, there are lots of other areas that need our assessment data. The value added is coming up, and we're trying to get the best test we can for the children of Minnesota, and for the teachers to help them improve their instruction. I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Van Sickle for a presentation, but please stop us at any time that you may have questions.
Welcome to the committee, Dr. Van Sickle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad to be here this morning. I think we have a lot to cover. I have a presentation that I will be flexible in giving, because you may have questions that lead us down a different path, and if I need to change presentations, I can do that in midstream. I understand that you want to know where we're headed, how we're doing test development, and those kinds of things. So let me just get right into it. I want to take you to this particular graphic just for you to see what this is about. It's a black artist in Texas that I got to know when I was doing some work in Texas back in the 90s. And if you look at the title and the date, the idea of No Child Left Behind is not new. A black artist, Mr. Beatty, the Beatty children, the Beatty people, are faceless kids, and he says all children can learn, and he signed that for me in 1993. We've lost contact about 4 or 5 years ago. I think No Child Left Behind is the 200-pound gorilla in the room. That's not what I have my eye on. My eye is really on those children that can learn. I think everybody agrees all children can learn. After that, No Child Left Behind gets a little dicey, I think, and people have lots of different opinions about that. So we're going to talk about assessment. But as I do, I want to ask you some questions to keep in mind and think about as I present what I think is our direction. If you think back to your high school days, or maybe your elementary days, when did you learn things like solving quadratic equations or balancing simple chemical equations or writing an essay on the Hundred Year War or maybe learning how a carburetor or fuel injectors work or something of that ilk? When did you learn it? How did you learn it? Could you demonstrate some of those skills today? And that's not necessarily to put anybody on the spot because I certainly can't diagram a complex sentence anymore. I can do some of the other things, but I can't do that one for sure. But anyway, what are the objectives for today? We're going to try to provide you an overview for 2006, and we'll come back and talk about what's going to happen in the spring of 05, if you wish.
Dr. Van Sickle,
yes.
If you could pause for just a brief moment. Members, we at this point do have a quorum, and so I officially call this meeting to order. Dr. Van Sickle, continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're going to try to provide you a long-range plan. Where are we headed with the assessment program in Minnesota? What are the things we think we need to do to change it, to make it better, so that we have a good accountability system and good graduation requirements for children in Minnesota? Hopefully give you a real brief overview of test development and how that works and why some things are done the way they are. And provide you a lot of opportunity for questions. At the end of this presentation, I'll give you a very short briefing paper that answers some questions I think you will probably be asking throughout this presentation, but if you ask them earlier, that's fine. You'll at least have the paper later. One of the things that you have to define up front for any testing program is what is the purpose. And as we move into testing the new standards, we needed to come up with a purpose statement. Teachers who were working on the test spec committee and other committees, item review committees, were asked, what would the purpose of the MCAs actually look like? What would we do? Well, the primary purpose is that 200-pound gorilla, that accountability piece. How do Minnesota kids, in general, perform against the standards that we just adopted in math, reading in 2003, and science that we just adopted in 2004? Three other supplementary things about that would be to help teachers make decisions about classroom instruction, help districts and schools make decisions about curriculum, and lastly, and maybe more importantly than any of the others, although we hadn't thought about it being important until we got into the fall, and that's growth of children. But it makes perfectly good sense that mom and dad would want to know how Johnny and Susie are doing between grade 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, etc. So growth is another piece. We've used the word value added. I'll use the word growth as it has a particular meaning for psychometricians like myself. Where are we going to be in 2006? The new standards will be assessed for the first time. We will have reading and math tests in grades 3 through 8. These will be used solely for accountability purposes. That's that big 200-pound gorilla in the room. And even if No Child Left Behind wasn't here, I think taxpayers in Minnesota would want to know whether kids are learning what it is we expect them to learn. So an accountability system makes sense. We will move the grade 5 writing test to grade 6, and I'll explain why in a little bit. It's used solely for development. Teachers use it as a way of seeing how children are writing and getting them ready for later writing tasks. We will have grade 9 writing, and we're moving that from grade 10. Currently, it's in grade 10, and that's part of the graduation requirement. Can students write at a minimal level in order to get a diploma? We're going to also then have a grade 10 reading test based on the new standards used for, we think, graduation and accountability. And I'll talk about that in a minute, why we think it'll be graduation and accountability. We'll also have a grade 11 math test as a graduation requirement and as accountability. Again, I'll talk about the graduation changes and what we think might happen or what we propose should happen, I guess is the way to put that. We'll also conduct a study to move the grade 11 math test to grade 10. When I asked the question, why did we do this at grade 11, there wasn't a good particular pedagogical reason. It seems to be more an implementation, not having all kids in 10th grade take two tests, something like that. So we would need to do a study to see about moving that. There's been an emphasis on all children leaving Minnesota high schools being ready for post-secondary education. One of the initiatives that came down from pay grades above mine is how could we use the ACT assessment system as part of our assessment system together with the MCAs. So there's two pieces of that. There's an 8th grade explore test and a 10th grade plan test. Both of these are linked to the ACT assessment. And most of you know that Minnesota is primarily an ACT assessment state. About 60% of our seniors take the ACT assessment. About half of those seniors actually go on and get a 4-year degree in about 5 years. That's better than the national average, by the way. And our average test scores on the ACT assessment are about 2.5 points higher than average for the nation. So it's useful for us to think about that. It would be good if in 2006 all 8th and 10th graders took this. That's from a purely research sort of selfishness on my part. It will be optional for districts to participate in the explore and plan part of this.
And we do know that at this time 40% of the students in the state are taking the 10th grade plan in their district. So the state would then pay for it instead of the district.
Members, as was stated earlier, for those who just came in, if you have any questions throughout the presentation, don't bother to raise, or don't hesitate. Don't bother. I don't know, maybe that was Freudian. No, please don't. Don't hesitate to raise your hand, and we'll address those at that time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do have some other tests that we do give from the state of Minnesota.
Excuse me, Doctor. As I make that mention, we have a legislator that has a question. Representative Daphne.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You were looking at me when you said bother, weren't you? A couple of questions. I noticed, sir, and I'm sorry, I came in late and I missed your name.
Tim Van Sickle.
Mr. Van Sickle. Doctor?
Doctor, yes.
Yeah, that psychometrician thing. I noticed that the three goals you stated for the testing, accountability, what I'm going to refer to as curriculum assessment.
Or guidance, yes.
Guidance.
Mm-hmm.
And growth. I noticed that there's no goal of assessing student learning in a diagnostic fashion that's useful for parents, teachers, and students.
We do think
that
we'll be able to...
Call.
I'm sorry. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative, I do believe we'll give information that's useful to teachers and to students and to parents. We could do a better job today with our reporting than we have been. Our plan is to make that report as useful as possible. As we go through the presentation, you'll notice that I'm going to say multiple times that multiple measures are important and that one test can't do everything. So the MCAs serve a particular purpose, and when you extend a test to doing more than a couple of things, it starts not to do them well. So if the question is, are there other things that could be done for students and teachers, the answer is yes. Can one test do it all? The answer is no. And so it comes down to what should our system look like, and the plan that I've presented so far and that I think will work for Minnesota and put Minnesota at the forefront is looking at an accountability part, but there should be some other pieces that go in it. The ACT assessment piece that we just talked about is part of that. There could be things that the districts do that should be helpful. Some districts use NWEA MAP or the ALT. Some use the Iowa Test of Basic Skills. Some use Assess to Learn. I don't know if the state should mandate one of those things or not, but they serve different purposes for teachers and for parents.
Representative Cadney.
Thank you. Dr. Van Sickle, you brought up a second question. Your proposal to move towards these ACT tests at 8th and 10th grades, what tests would you propose that those replace?
Actually, I don't...
Dr. Van Sickle.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative, I don't think they're going to replace anything. As I said, I'd like to see them the first year be all students, because that's a research question. What's the research we would do is, how would you link post-secondary readiness back to the MCAs? After that, it would be optional by district, so it wouldn't necessarily replace any of the tests that we have. From an accountability standpoint, neither the Explorer nor the plan are aligned to our state standards, although ACT would say they are. There will be holes or gaps in what they measure and what they don't measure. So a complete substitution of those for something else probably wouldn't work.
Representative Sikora.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Van Sickle, it was my understanding that if we put the 8th grade tests and the 10th grade tests in, these would be essentially for the purposes of assessment of those kids so that they would be on track to graduate or on track to go on to some form of higher education, that part of the purpose of this was to move more children into higher education. Is that how you see this? Assess what they would need in order to get there.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Sikora, yes, I think the ACT assessment system, and there could be others that we'd use, I suppose, has a counseling component that allows students to see a myriad of different kinds of things. Unfortunately, I happened to work at ACT for about 9 years, so I know this program pretty well, so I don't want to sound like a salesperson. But it does let children see a couple of things. How am I doing if I were looking at post-secondary work in terms of a college degree? Some students never think about it, and all of a sudden this test score shows up and says, geez, you know, you might do well in college. Those students who think they are going on to college and get poor scores, it might be a wake-up call that says, you really need to be taking certain kinds of courses. Now, the ACT assessment system presumes that students will be taking college preparatory work. And there is a set of classes that sort of underlie the ACT assessment system. And the counseling piece also gives them some career planning guidance if they want to use that. What they might be interested in. I might be interested in scientific kinds of occupations. So it is a counseling tool and I think gives students a lot of information, certainly gives parents a lot of information, helps teachers understand where children might be going and might get some students to move faster along the track to be ready for post-secondary education.
Mm-hmm. Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Van Sickle, I got a comment and a question. A comment would be when you're talking about looking at moving the math test to grade 10 from grade 11, I know that in one of our, in our district, we're starting to require 3 years of math.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to see it stay at grade 11 because 9, 10, 11, they'll be in their third year of math and have a better chance of scoring well. I'll wait for my next question.
Continue on, Dr. Van Sickle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I said, we do have a whole bunch of other tests that we give. As you know, we have now about 102 languages spoken in Minnesota schools. That's a tremendous influx of students and resources that need to be applied to that. From an accountability standpoint, it doesn't make a lot of sense to test kids in English if they don't have academic English skills. So we do have a test currently available that measures their acquisition of academic English, and that's called the T-test, the Test of Emerging Academic English. We use that for our ELL students across all the grades to help figure out where these students are. It's used for Title III funds primarily. It's not yet used for accountability, but we would like to use it in place of the MCA 2 reading test. We've heard some things from the federal government that would suggest that this would be something they would be willing to do. I think it's a fairer measure of what those students are capable of doing until they have, in fact, acquired good academic English skills. We have another test that we use. It's a rating scale for students who are not able to take the T very well. It's used for Title III. We have a pilot project in place now that might replace this. It's a computer-based test, or will be. It's the Test of Emerging Academic English Listening and Speaking, and I think that might be a very good replacement for the Minnesota Slalom. And then we have our alternate assessment system right now, which is really a rating scale in which teachers rate their individual students on a scale of 1 to 7 for reading and math and various pieces like that. And also there's a functional scale that is also on 1 to 7. This test needs, or this assessment needs to be redone under No Child Left Behind. As it currently stands, it has no psychometric rigor. So we are in the process of looking at what can we do for our alternate assessment for 2006. Right now, we've been talking to vendors and talking to people and looking at research and other states and trying to figure out what Minnesota might do without putting an extra burden on special ed teachers, because they already have lots to do. So we're not trying to make more work for them. We're just trying to find a way to assess their students in a fair and reliable manner.
Dr. Van Sickle, if I
yes.
can ask a question, please. Did I hear you say that the department is considering seeking a waiver from the federal government to use the T-test for NCLB compliance for English language learners? Is that what I heard you say, that you're at least considering seeking that waiver?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to answer that, if I may. Sure. I've just come back from a meeting with some representatives of the federal government, and it does look like we might be able to use the T as an alternate assessment for at least a couple years for the ELL students. We do need to do some technical research work to back up, you know, our claim that the test is technically sound, and we've already started that. So yes, it is quite possible, and we will be pursuing that aggressively.
Assistant Commissioner Olson, are there other states that will be joining Minnesota in this pursuit?
The T-test is strictly a Minnesota test. Okay. There are other states that are doing something similar.
Thank you. Dr. Van Sickle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the last part of this slide for 2006, you'll see it says BST, our basic skills test retakes, will continue. But if you remember the previous slides, we talked about grade 10 and 11 being graduation requirements. We recommend that the BST be terminated in 2006, and that those 2006 eighth graders would fall under a new graduation requirement. There's a lot of work to do to make that happen, both legislatively and in rule, and a lot of technical work that has to happen. Why would we recommend this? Well, if we think about the basic skills test, it's a very low-level test at the moment, about grade 6 or 7 in terms of grade level in reading and math. And yet we have tests that we expect all students in Minnesota to be proficient at a level much higher than that. So the graduation requirement kind of is not a very rigorous one. With the emphasis towards higher education, it makes sense to move the graduation requirement. Is there a danger in this in terms of students' failure rate initially? Probably. But I think there are some technical ways that we can work around that by having essentially bits and pieces of the 10th grade and 11th grade, or 10th grade and 10th grade reading and math tests be used for graduation. Some subpart of that would be the graduation requirement, maybe not the entire MCA test, the MCA2s. So at this point in time, no 8th grader would be taking anything that remotely looks like a graduation requirement in 2006. And we would only continue the BSTs for those students who didn't pass initially in 8th grade until they're out of the system. And so that's where we will be in 2006. And I have a whole bunch of slides kind of going between 06 and 09, but if you can bear with me just a little bit, I'm going to flash through those and sort of fast forward us to 2009. So this doesn't take us a little bit of time to get through this, but I think it'll be okay. I should probably stop here. I'm sorry. I do need to mention one thing about science and one thing about another test for ELL students. As you know, we passed the science standards this year. We've begun the initial development of science. Science is going to be developed solely on computer. Why would we do that? Well, the teachers in Minnesota, especially those teachers in the Teacher Quality Network, made it very clear to me my third day on the job they did not want it to be a paper and pencil test, because you couldn't measure scientific reasoning and science skills simply on a flat piece of paper. They really wanted it to be on computer. So we intend to build this test from the beginning on computer. Why science and not the other test? Well, science is low stakes. Although it's part of the NCLB law, it does not bring with it any penalty. If a computer were to go down, it's bad for the child. If a lab goes down, it's bad for all those kids. If a school or a district loses its computer capability, it's bad for the school or district. But no one gets penalized. Students don't get penalized. Districts don't get penalized. So we think this is a safe place to begin our computer look at things. If we can do it in science, it's going to be a very hardware-intensive type of test, If we can do it in science, we will eventually move to all computer by 2009 for everything. The other thing, we now translate into four languages, and I said we have 102. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do that. We're not serving all those children very well. We thought about coming up with a separate math test for ELL students. We're going to call it the TEAM, the Test of Emerging Academic Mathematics. We're going to try to get rid of the English language verbiage that flows around our current math test and see if we can do something that would be able to measure ELL students fairly about their mathematics, not put a great burden on districts in terms of translating tests, and not expend a lot of money when only six or seven kids actually are taking the translated versions at just about every grade. That's about the right number, with the exception of Spanish, which is our largest translated test, which has about 112 students a year, and the expense is fairly great for translating tests. Again, I'll try to move through to 2009 and show you where we'll be. Well, something in between 2009 and here. In 2008, based on legislation, we can revisit the reading and math test academic standards. I'm going to bet they're going to change, which means we're going to have a transition to the MCA3s, which will probably occur in 2010, because I don't think they'll stay the same. Anytime the standards change, the accountability tests need to change to match that, and we'll have to have probably a two-year transition period just like we did this time. So where will we be in 2009 if everything goes well? Reading and math in 3 through 8 on the computer. Grade 6 writing on computer. Grade 9 writing on computer. Grade 10 reading and math on computer. We will have our third year of growth scores at this point under the new MCA2s that we're currently developing. Explore and plan will be optional for districts. They don't have to participate, but we would certainly encourage that. We'll have the science test in grades 5, grade 8, and somewhere in high school, because the science high school test is recommended to be an end-of-course life science test. And in Minnesota, we teach biology in various grades. Some teach it in 10, some teach it in 11, some teach it in 12. So based on the district preference for teaching biology, that'll be where that high school science test is given. We will have the T reading and writing test in place of the MCA reading test and writing test. We'll have the TEALS, which will help us inform how well these students are learning their academic English and being able to speak it. We'll have the TEAM test, which will measure ELL students' math abilities. We'll have a new alternate assessment in place. At this point, I believe all of the children who are under the BST graduation requirements will be out of the system, and I believe this is when the BST retakes would end. All the while that this is going on, we will, of course, have retakes for those students who don't pass reading, math, and writing as a graduation requirement. Those will continue. Those will continue on computer. So this is where we're headed. Lots, as I said, has to happen between now and 2009. This is a very aggressive schedule. Our current test vendors and those that we've been interviewing, I'm going to run by a couple of slides as I'm talking, that we've been interviewing for the new contracts, have warned us repeatedly that this is an aggressive schedule to get onto computer. There's a lot of infrastructure that has to be explored and those kinds of things. I believe Minnesota can do it. I mean, I'm a product of Minnesota Public Schools from the Iron Range. I think we can do a lot of things better than we have done. And so this plan is to try to make us the best testing program in the country if we can pull it off. If we don't pull it off, I'm going to have egg on my face and you'll fire me. And it'll be quite that simple. So that's the plan. If you have questions about the plan, certainly would take those. Otherwise, I would transition, I think, into some test development stuff so that you know how we're doing our job at the Department of Ed.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and this is maybe for Ms. Olson or Dr. Van Sickle. You mentioned the science test, and I know we've talked a little bit about this before. Is science going to be part of No Child Left Behind as far as participation and proficiency standards in the long term?
Assistant Commissioner Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Marquardt, at this time, no, there is no accountability requirement for science. We have to give it according to NCLB, but it's not part of the AYP system, which gives us a little leeway to kind of explore the infrastructure as far as computers. If we need to, we can open the window to 3 or 4 weeks instead of 2, and you know, to give everybody time to get on the computers. There, we don't know what will happen with the new reauthorization, whether it will be required then, but at this time there's no indication that it will become part of the AYP system.
Representative Quinzing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Van Sickle, I know at one time, I don't know if it was your department, but I know the Department of Education was seeking a waiver to allow value-added assessment here in Minnesota, and I was wondering if that's still ongoing, if that process is still ongoing, and if these tests are going to be able to be used in that way. And my second question was about if you could expound a little bit more on why such an aggressive schedule is necessary.
Dr. Van Sickle, are you going to tackle this one?
I certainly can. Thank you, Chairman. Representative. Value added or growth certainly is something we've talked to the federal government about. Our commissioner has been to Washington at least once with a group of 4 or 5 other commissioners. The federal government is talking about letting us use value added in some way, maybe safe harbor, allowing schools who don't meet getting all the children over some particular level. But if they're making progress in terms of growth, to be given safe harbor so that they won't be identified as being not meeting AYP. I don't know that it will replace the entire accountability structure. There are some technical issues. I wasn't going to talk about those, but I'll talk about them. Technical issues with that in terms of as we go through 3 through 8, and I'll show you a slide hopefully later about how we're planning on making growth work for grades 3 through 8. There are content issues, that is, third grade math and eighth grade math are not very similar. There are issues about aligning the standards, that is, not only what does it mean when we say students are on grade level at 3, it has to mean the same thing at 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. So there's a number of things that we need to do in terms of vertical alignment, vertical scaling and equating so that we can make a growth scale work. But those are technical issues that I think we can do. Our National Technical Advisory Committee has mixed opinions about that, but they all have come up with different solutions that I think will work. I think the reality is we'll use all the solutions and try to come up with the best possible growth scale for Minnesota students in 3 through 8 for sure. 10 and 11 becomes a little bit different problem because students get to choose different kinds of coursework and things like that. But for sure, the elementary and middle school will be able to show growth.
Thank you. Representative Quinzing, could you restate your second question?
Thank you. The second question was if you could expound upon why the need for the aggressive schedule.
Dr. Van Sickle.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it comes down to, I've been on this job 10 months. The first 6 months we're trying to right the ship and get things going and listening to lots and lots of people. And it became apparent that Minnesota was anxious to get ahead of the curve. The chair in his opening remarks actually said something that I would have said in this presentation, but I'll just reiterate. Minnesota is behind the curve in terms of assessment. You had a ban on assessment when others were already doing standards-based assessment in the early 90s and the late 80s, and so we're playing catch-up. Given everything I've heard from the ed orgs and from senators and representatives and teachers and just a lot of folks, this schedule gets us to where we want to go as rapidly as I think is possible. Could we take another year or two? I'd love to. I don't know that the various stakeholders would allow us to take longer than we currently have planned.
Representative Crowley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Dr. Van Sickle or Dr. Olson. I'd like to follow up on that Representative Quinzing's value-added question because I didn't quite get that. I'm, as you know, on the stakeholders group, and there's a variety of things that people have a variety of opinions on, but one of them that we all agree on is that Minnesota use value added and that it be used for AYP. And having the flexibility of a safe harbor option is not anywhere near having value added be what we would use routinely to be judging how students are doing. You know, when we first got interested in this testing in the first place, a lot of us on a bipartisan basis took a look at Texas with Just for the Kids, and we liked it that they compared a poor school with a poor school, and one of them the kids made growth and one of them didn't, instead of saying, you know, it's really hard, it's impossible in these schools to get anywhere, so we should not be so harsh on them. We should be more harsh on them when one school was achieving and one school wasn't and they had the same circumstances. That's the beauty of value added for kids. And so I'm very distressed, if I heard you correctly, that Washington said no to us being able to do that and count it for AYP.
Assistant Commissioner Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Breiling, that's a good point and one we are still pursuing aggressively. Right now, Washington is very firm that they will not accept value-added data as part of the AYP system, especially as the main assessment. Minnesota is not alone in fighting for this, and the commissioner is now on a committee of different state leaders who are also pushing it, and we're starting to get a little bit of feedback that they might be open, but because of the new secretary taking over, nobody's making any decisions right now. So we're hoping now that the commissioner, or the secretary, I'm sorry, that the secretary in Washington has been confirmed and will be sworn in, that there will start to be movement in Washington. But in the meantime, we are developing the MCA2s to be able to give us all of the value-added data that we will need to move forward. And we'll certainly be using it any way we can within the state and keep pushing the feds so it can be our AYP system.
Representative Crown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope that you will do that. And I know that Commissioner Segrin feels just as strongly about it as those of us on this committee. So I would be just amazed, you know, especially since the system that we first started looking at came from President Bush's very own state, that the Washington wouldn't see it, that this is the way to make authentic comparisons and really and make it just for the kids and not for political purposes or trying to bash public schools or anything else. And so I hope that that you will continue working as hard as you can on that. And then my second question, Mr. Chair, revolves around what is, and maybe if you're going to get to it, just wait, but if not, I'll ask it now just to make sure we get to it. The status on the conference committee report mandate or dictate or whatever it was last year to look at the computer-based tests. And the idea that the MCAs are so slow in getting the results back for teachers to be able to use in their teaching, but the computer-based test, they can get results instantly, and a lot of, I just met with the principals a couple weeks ago, a lot of legislators did, and they repeated that they really want that, you know, because it's better for kids and their teachers can use it. And we hear a lot of complaining that the other results don't come back to the same teacher. They come back the next year when a whole different composition of kids is there with a different teacher. And it's not so much, it's, you know, evaluative of the school in general, but it doesn't help the diagnostic teaching for students. So what is the status of that, looking at that and evaluating that, and what is the likelihood that Minnesota is going to use that test as our test?
Assistant Commissioner Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Breiling, as Dr. Van Sickle said earlier, the MCA is diagnostic at a higher level. It is not meant to be diagnostic to the level where, you know, teachers can use it to say the student should be moved from the Bluebird group to the Robin group in reading. We have heard about the time it takes for reporting. We have heard about the usefulness of reports. I mean, we've heard districts don't even look at the reports because they're just unusable. We are working very, very hard on reports. We're getting together some stakeholders groups, parents, business people, teachers, administrators, to redesign the reports so that they are useful. The time issue, unfortunately, since we now have to test the, you know, we inherited a testing window that is now the beginning of May. Even if we got results back as quickly as we could, the kids are on their way out. What we propose to do, though, is, like you said, the reports come back to a teacher that doesn't have the kids anymore. We are looking into re-rostering the reports. In other words, when the teachers show up in the fall, they would get the reports for the kids that are going to be in their class that year with, you know, information on these are the standards that this group needs to work on. These are the students that should get extra work in this standard. These students are doing well in another standard. So that the information is more useful, it'll be clearer, and it'll be accompanied by more information on the web that parents and teachers can use, like what are some instructional strategies to help with the teach the standard, or what can I do to help my student.
Representative Carlin.
Thank you. Could you refresh my memory? Why did we inherit the May window? Why don't we have any flexibility in that?
Assistant Commissioner Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greiling, it's my understanding it was the stakeholders group that determined that window. We could discuss it at our next meeting, but that's what I was told, and that it was firm because everyone wanted to know exactly when the testing would be.
Representative Garland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My last question. Sorry. Could you? What was the answer then about the conference committee asked that the department report back on the feasibility of using that test? What is the answer, and is there going to be a formal answer?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Browning, I'm sorry, I forgot that part. I've just met with Dr. Davidson at the university. The report is progressing. I believe he's giving an update on around March 15th to Senator Kelly's committee, and the full report is due in June.
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, I would just ask then that we have it in this committee as well. Do you think that'll be slated?
Looking at my crystal ball, I think we would have time to have a presentation. I don't know to what length, but yeah, it's quite appropriate that we talk about that in this committee. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greiling was asking my question that I delayed, and in speaking with the math teachers in my high school, they don't take the kids, a lot of them, don't take the MCAs seriously. Number one, they don't get the results back until the next year. They don't count for anything. Maybe making them a graduation requirement will help that. But I'm glad to see we're going towards a computer mode, because then you could get instant feedback, and the teachers could actually even count them for a grade maybe, you know. That seems to have a little bit to do with the incentive to do well on the test. But if the feds are not going to let us do value added, then maybe we should have a little chat with the feds and what we think of NCLB at that point. Maybe we should talk about opting out or something, but it's just a personal viewpoint.
Always a possibility, Representative Wardlow. Representative Quincy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a real quick question or request, I guess, on the value added. It was my understanding in talking with Dr. Engemeyer last year that there was a psychometric reason why it's difficult to do value added, not necessarily a political reason in terms of why NCLB isn't accepting it. And I think it might be a little intense to go into right here. I know it started to get intense last year when we were talking about this, but is there a summary of the psychometric, you know, differences between value added versus the, you know, what are we calling this other kind? some summary that you have that you could provide us that we could read to try to distinguish the psychometric problems with going, you know, the advantages and disadvantages, I think were the things that Dr. Ingemeyer was going through.
Dr. Van Sickle, I think that's a yes, 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 no, no, yes. What combination of the two?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, it depends on what you, if you want a cure for insomnia, I can give you a lot of summaries. Whole journals, in fact, have been given up to the idea of value added. We've written a few things, and certainly we can try to write something that maybe is better suited to this body than to people like myself. And so we'll work on that. I don't have one that I can give you. I do have some articles I could certainly send up. I probably should send neck braces along because you'll get very tired of reading Greek symbols. But there are issues about how, for example, just to be as brief as I can, if a student is performing way below level, and your target is to get them all above some level, how do you move them there? Do you require more of them than other students? And if they belong to some particular group of children, are you somehow disadvantaging them by asking more? That's one issue. Psychometrically, there's the whole issue of regression to the mean and a number of other things that go along with that. So I will try to get you something that is easier to read than the journal articles that I certainly have now, so that this body will have a sense of that. I think there's two things I'd like to say in closing. Value added and growth are not necessarily synonymous, and when I've spoken with folks like yourselves, typically they're talking about growth. How did children change between this time point and that time point? Value added goes a step further, or can go a step further, in looking at who's responsible for that change. And then we really get into some psychometric and some statistical issues. But I'll try to get a summary to you as soon as
thank you, Dr. Van Sickle. And if you could get it to Ms. Bowie, our
Ms. Bowie,
CA, she can make sure all members of the committee get that. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Van Sickle, to what extent are districts using the NWEA for diagnostic, and do we know how prevalent something like that is throughout the state?
Dr. Van Sickle.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the word that I have is that about half the schools in Minnesota use something from NWEA. Either it's the MAP, which is the computerized version, which is adaptive, or use the paper and pencil version called the ALT. Only a few schools have I heard from that use it more than once. And so the reality is if they're using it one time, it's not a whole lot better in terms of diagnostics than the MCAs, although the computerized version could give you some very interesting stuff at particular strand levels. Can they add and subtract two-digit numbers? Because it'll be lots of questions asked at that point. There are those schools who are using that and Assess to Learn and some other things multiple times through the school year, and then that does help. Teachers know, I've done this instruction, Johnny and Susie didn't get it, I go back and re-instruct, I test them again. That's a very different purpose than an accountability measure. That's formative assessment is what we call that in the trade.
Thank you. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Van Sickle, did I understand you to say that you know of only one instance where schools are using it, and they're using it only once in the entire year?
Dr. Van Sickle.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative, yes, that is in fact true. I think Dr. Angermeyer in Bloomington uses the MAP, not the ALT, once. There are some other folks that I know that use it only one time during the year, typically in the fall to get a read on where their children are, and then I'm making an assumption that they then plan their curriculum around that as a teacher, but I don't know that that's what happens, but I'm assuming that that's what happens.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Van Sickle, I think there's at least two schools in my district that are using them, and I think up to four times a year is what their contract is, and they're using it to measure students all along the way, and quite intensively. That's Byron and Cass in Manorville, if you're interested. And I think there's others that Triton might be using it also. I'm not sure how many times. But that you might want to check with those, because I think that's considerably more than the one that you're talking about.
Thank you. Dr. Van Sickle, if you would continue with your presentation. We have about 25 more minutes, members of the committee, for this presentation and question and answer, because we do have people who have asked to testify to the state of assessment from their eyes also, and we're going to allow them time to come to the fore also. Dr. Van Sickle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have passed through a couple other things. I want to just stop on this particular slide for a minute. I spoke earlier about different types of tests doing different kinds of things, and this slide is quite frankly something I wrote for a book chapter a number of years ago that said there are lots of different kinds of tests and they serve different purposes. You have instructor-made tests that teachers give all the time. What we're building for Minnesota would be considered a customized criterion reference test. They're built to our state standards. There are companies who produce tests that are off-the-shelf CRTs. There are companies who build norm reference tests like the MAP or the Iowas. There's just a plethora of things that are out there in terms of testing, and they all do different things slightly differently. I would give you the analogy. If you have one of those hybrid cars, you're going to move your family pretty efficiently, but you're not going to haul your boat to the lake. And if you have that big 4x4 pickup truck, it's going to haul the boat and it's going to haul the plywood, but it's not going to do a very good job of some other things. So the MAP and the Assess to Learn and things like that are probably really good for students and teachers who use it multiple times and get a read on how instruction is going. Whether we build the CRT, the MCA2s, or we buy something like that as an accountability measure, it's a time slice that says this is what these kids have learned at this point in time. So tests have different purposes and different things to go on. So to make things very quickly, I'm going to go through some slides very fast and not spend a lot of time on here. This is the test development cycle in a nutshell. You can't read it. I'll explain it very quickly. There's lots and lots of steps that go into this, an educational need. What is the purpose of the test that we want to do? It comes down to a test design, item development and reviews, lots of things in terms of psychometrics, etc. The reality is, in Minnesota, we hadn't used a lot of subject matter experts, SMEs, to help us with that. This summer we engaged about 350, 400 teachers to help in the process. We now have a database of over 1,000. It is to get the right folks into the right place and use their expertise about cognitive development, human development, pedagogy, content so that the test is as reliable and valid as possible. I'm going to whip through some of these just in terms of time. When we do a test design, really we try to figure out what the purpose is. How long can the test be? If you listen to people in Minnesota, we have too much testing, it takes too much time. I'll give you a table in a minute, a handout that you can take that shows how much time we actually ask about. What's the content? What are the proportions of that content? What are the item types? How do we limit that content? It typically starts with standards. We have new academic standards. We're working on trying to figure out what the test specifications should be. As I said, we've used a lot of teachers. We've partnered with all of the ed orgs. We've recruited as many of the good teachers in Minnesota as we can to participate. They're all highly qualified. They get the opportunity to look at the proportions, look at the content, set the limits, clarify the meaning of benchmarks, not to undo the standards, but to figure out how we're going to assess them. Our standards are what we are measuring. But they're not all measurable in a very concise or efficient manner. So the test specifications, what are they for? They're to help to define the test. They're to guide the test developer, not necessarily the teacher, although teachers will look at it, but that's not the goal of it. Help the item writers write items so that we're measuring the standards as we think they should be. Guide reviewers, those of you who know about No Child Left Behind and other accountability measures, you usually have to have an outside expert or group of experts review your testing program, and so the test specifications will help those folks review our tests. It does communicate scope to people, tells them how many items are going to be on the test and what kinds of items will be on the test and those things. But teachers should not teach to the test specifications. Why? Well, there are some standards or benchmarks that we can't measure on a paper and pencil test. I can't measure listening and speaking. I can't measure some of the things in vocabulary very well. Or it would be a waste of money and time to do it because it would be better if it was done at a teacher level. And it's documentation for part of our peer review process and things of that ilk. It really comes down to, though, building or establishing content validity for the test. The test isn't valid, you shouldn't be giving it. And validity is really for the purpose. And in this case, the purpose is to figure out how students are doing generally against our standards. And that's not just some students, it's all the students that we can measure with the MCA2s. And for those students who can't acquire or take that test. Then we have alternate assessments for those children to demonstrate their knowledge on those academic standards, whether that's the T in the team or an alternate assessment for special education students. There's lots of other things that happen in test development. There's a whole bunch of psychometrics, and I won't bore you with all of the Greek symbols and all of the things there, but we have to make sure that the properties of the items are well and good, and that the test overall is good and functioning as well as we can make it given the amount of time we're allowed to have students test. Reporting, we must do a better job. And yes, where we are currently at the end of the year, even if I were to turn around the scores the very next day, the teacher doesn't have much time to do anything between then and the end of school. But we can do something on the other side, as Commissioner Olson said. We can re-roster so that the teacher coming in next year has his or her students already set. They know where they left off in the previous grade. They know where their strengths and weaknesses are, and they can adjust their learning at that point. That's as far as we can go, and so some other test needs to be used for formative assessment during that period of time. I don't know if the state should mandate something or not. That's for somebody else to decide, because there are lots and lots of tests out there besides NWE and Assess to Learn and First to Know and EPAN and just a whole bunch of companies who do that kind of thing, and almost all of them on computer now. We have a whole bunch of scaling and equating to do. What are the scores we're going to report? How are they equal from year to year, so kids are being compared fairly, so that we have growth, etc. We'll need to do new standard setting in 2006. That is, what's the hurdle for each of the five levels that we have in Minnesota? What's the hurdle that they have to get over to be considered proficient? So all of that has to happen in 2006. There's all of these things about vertical scaling and vertically moderated standards so that we can show growth, at least in 3 through 8. I do believe we'll have a problem trying to show growth from 8th grade to 10th grade just because of content issues and changes in content. But there is this thing called growth or value added, if that's the term you wish to use, although that connotes something different to me. And so we're going to work very hard at it. And this is a diagram simply that shows how we think we're going to link these. We'll have items that run between grades, and we will adjust difficulty and produce a score scale between 3 and 4, 4 and 5, 5 and 6, 6 and 7, 7 and 8. And if the federal government gets their way and they add grade 9 to this, we can extend this model up to grade 9, because I think most kids are still taking pretty much the same kind of coursework in grade 9. After that, it might get a little dicey for us. So we have a plan. We've got the technical expertise now, not only on staff, but our technical advisory committee. Our vendors are well-versed on this. This is a hot topic, growth, and how we do that. So we'll work out those technical issues as quickly as we can. We do have a handout with questions that I think probably would be good to go through that might answer some of the other questions, and so if we could hand those out, I will try to give you a sense then of what we're going to do in 2005 and some questions that you probably still have burning in the back of your head. And as you get this, I put it together as a question and answer piece. It's fairly short. I think it will do us well as a discussion piece. What are we going to require of students in 2005 from the state side of the house? In grades 3 and 5, you'll see we're going to require 6 hours of testing total. 3 hours for reading, 3 hours for math. That's the same for reading and math in grade 5, but there is a grade 5 writing test in 2005 that requires another 2 hours. So 8 hours of testing time for students. We currently have the BSTs, which we give about in February, about 4.5 hours for the reading and math portion of the BST. We have a grade 10 reading test, and we give the grade 10 writing test. So we have about 5.5 hours of testing time for 10th graders. Grade 11 math is about 3 hours. We give that in April, along with the rest of the 3, 5, and 7 tests. And then we have a whole bunch of BST tests, retakes, and those vary by student and which tests they have to take. So although we hear a lot about how much time testing takes, the state doesn't require all that much. But districts add their own, whether it's the Iowa Test of Basic Skills or the MAP or the ALT or whatever it is that they're using. So there is probably a lot of testing. And then you add instructor-made tests to that, there is a lot of testing. So the second question there is, why is there so much? Some of it is simply the need to have different pieces of information. And one of the things I must say is that as a psychometrician, we have standards for educational psychological testing. When we have decisions about students, we should use multiple measures. One test score should never be used for a high stakes decision. That's just not going to get you a lot of information, especially if you think about 60 items. Most college-level tests probably go more than 60 items, and you probably get an hour, hour and a half to do that on the final in some colleges. At least I know when I used to teach at the college level, my tests were longer than 100 items, and they didn't have a whole lot of time to do that. Probably unfair to students. Maybe I was too hard. I don't know. There's lots of other things we could talk about. But why do we need more than one kind of test? I've said this a couple of times. They do different things. They have different purposes. They give us a different look at things. We do have some other tests that happen in Minnesota. I said the ACT, and I said we are about 2.5 points higher than average. We have about 35% of the kids in Minnesota take the SAT. We are also slightly above average on the SATs. We also participate in the National Assessment of Educational Progress. And we do pretty well on those. And when you look at all of those things combined in Minnesota, even though we might say 30% of our students aren't proficient on the MCAs, that means 70% are. And if we look at the averages on those other tests, we're doing pretty well. Are we doing well enough? Maybe not. That's a decision that others should probably make. I give you a tool that tells you how we're doing, and try to give you a picture of these other things so that we have a sense of how Minnesota is doing. Where are we going in 2006? There's a chart there that shows the number of hours, etc. Looks just like the other one. And so the testing time doesn't change a whole lot. We're not trying to make students sit for 8 hours, and I've heard those stories. And my first blush is that if a student is sitting in front of a 60-item, mostly multiple-choice item for 8 hours, we've not done a very good job of identifying that student's needs in terms of either accommodations or something. There's a lot of evidence that says extended time at some point becomes detrimental to student scores, and I would say 8 hours in front of any of our tests, even the MAP or the ALT or the Iowas, is just way too much, and we probably need to be finding out what's going on there. I've already given you, I think the next one on there on page 3 is really where are we going. That was the whole presentation. Where are we headed? Why are we headed there? I've given you a real brief overview of test development. Gladly talk about test development psychometrics all day long until you probably have your eyes roll back up in the back of your head. And then I asked you some questions at the beginning, and I'm going to try to roll those into the last one. When did you learn to solve the quadratic equations? Can you do it today? Can you diagram complex sentences? Can you balance chemical equations? Can you write me an essay on the Hundred Years' War? Do you know how a carburetor or fuel injection works? And the question is, how do you know when a test is valid, and how do you build that validity into a test like we're doing for accountability all across the country, not just in Minnesota? And to do that, it's a complex set of skills and knowledges and abilities that really teachers are the best people to do that. Are there people who know more about content? Sure. There are people who probably know more about reading literature than I do, and more than math than I do, or even some of the teachers on these committees. And the idea of having content as correct as possible is a good one, but you can't sacrifice the thing about, can a student who's 12 years old generally learn formal operations like algebra? Piaget and Vygotsky and others in the cognitive world would say no. They're not ready. Some of our students are, some of our students aren't. So the reason we use teachers for all of this is to try to find out what's going to be the best way to assess, what things we can assess at certain grades. Do we have to move some things around? Are there things we can do to limit the testing items so that we get the best measurement for those kids as possible, so that we have a reliable and valid test? The last thing we want is for Minnesota to show up on the front page of the USA Today saying Minnesota's tests are invalid because they're unfair, or they don't measure what kids have an opportunity to learn. So that's why teachers are important. It's not that we have excluded other folks. Other people have had a chance to look at it, and they've certainly had their input into standards. They've had their input into various pieces of other things in terms of item reviews and bias and sensitivity reviews of items. So those probably were the questions I thought you'd ask. You probably have lots more. And that concludes the presentation. I know we're running a little long, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dr. Van Sickle. Is the state piloting MCAs this spring in 4th and 8th grade?
Yes, we are. Today, in the spring of 2005, we fully believe that almost all students in grades 4, 6, and 8 will participate in the pilot for the new MCA2s. The last numbers I saw, we have about 55,000 students test booklets being ordered. You always have some attrition in that. So we're pretty close to having full participation in the pilot. That's very important in terms of getting us ready for 2006.
And we achieve that participation rate, Dr. Van Sickle, not through mandating, but through voluntary compliance. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. I have no power to mandate anything, so I have to beg and plead and cajole district test coordinators to participate.
Assistant Commissioner Olson, can you take us through the process that the department undertook in getting from the point where the legislature passed the state standards, right, and was signed into law by the governor, to the point where we have tests which are meant to measure those standards? What process did the Department of Education go through to go from actually A to about Z?
Mr. Chairman of the Committee, after the standards were adopted, and this was before either of us were with the department had contracted with one of our testing vendors to translate the standards into test specifications. These were then posted on the department website for public comment. In the meantime, we had both started and looked at test specifications, and they were nowhere near representative of the standards. So we eventually pulled them and reworked them so that they were a closer representation of the standards of what could be assessed. Certainly not fully compliant yet, but it was a good jumping off point for discussion. These we called the draft test specifications. They were then posted again on the website, and public comment was invited. Dr. Van Sickle, when was the first committee meeting?
The very first committee meeting, test specifications, was June 18th. We've had four in the summer and several since October. 20 to 30 teachers per grade content range. Comment in October had 55 people make comments, mostly positive, 95% saying the test specs did what we had expected to have done. A lot of comments about you really don't expect us to teach that much stuff in particular grades, and some concerns about the math test specifications and about the reading test specifications, or actually the reading standards, why literature was there. The test spec committees have met since then. They've addressed, maybe not resolved to everybody's liking, every one of the comments and all of the things that were brought to the forefront. Math is just finishing up. We've had some external people in to look at the test specs. We are trying very hard to be cognizant of the political process that happened earlier, but my goal is that we have a valid test, and so we've done everything we can to make sure that what we're going to measure in 2006 will in fact be representative of those standards. I think the teachers have worked very hard. We've got about 4,000 person hours into this now using teachers, so we've spent a little bit of time on it.
Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Van Sickle, as I put these two charts together side by side, I would say that your spring 2006 plan is much more consistent and much more logical for students. And One concern that I have as I look at it, though, is that we don't test writing until sixth grade. Is that really true? That would be, if it is, that would be slightly alarming to me, because I think that sixth grade, if you realize that a sixth grader does not have the basic skills in writing, that that is a little late.
Dr. Vensickel.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we moved it to grade six only because science is at grade five. We were trying to reduce the press on fifth grade students. Everybody we talked to suggested that moving writing to sixth grade would be okay. I would imagine there's always going to be differences of opinion about whether that's good or bad in terms of getting those kids ready for the grade nine writing test since we moved it back a year. It made sense to me from a testing standpoint. The people we talked to seemed to make sense that it was okay for a writing development thing. We could certainly move it back. That does increase the testing load on the fifth graders, however. So that was really the issue.
I would be...
Representative Beaker.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if even something earlier than that wouldn't be a better benchmark for...
Mr. Chair, Representative, we never broached the thing about going to fourth grade, so I don't have a good sense of the cognitive load or the pedagogy that will go into that. We can certainly explore that. I'm not opposed to it. As I said, it made sense to me that we moved it up because those skills, those sixth graders would certainly be able to write as well as fifth graders could. Would fourth graders be able to? There were some questions there in terms of assessment. But if content people felt it was okay and the pedagogy and all of that was okay, we could certainly explore moving it to fourth grade.
Assistant Commissioner Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, another thing to consider is originally when the writing was put in, it was put in as a kind of a precursor of how the students were moving toward being able to pass the BST. I think as we develop our new system, we're looking at things a little bit differently, and we certainly are open. Nothing is set in stone yet. We certainly are open to exploring what is it we want to use this test for and where is the best place to put it.
Follow-up, Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when I look at this flow of testing for 2006, would it be a fair, what, in your opinion, would you say a parent could get from this, or from these series of tests? Would they, this would not measure any sort of student growth. Would that be a fair statement?
Dr. Vensickel.
Mr. Chair, Representative. In 2006, we won't have a growth scale, but the next year, that third grader who goes from third grade to fourth grade, the parent will, in fact, get a growth score back. What it's going to look like, I can't tell you right now. There's lots of technical things to work out. But we fully intend to have growth scales in place and ready to report in 2007. That'd be the first year we could do it on the MCAT. We have considered doing something... Shall I say statistical from 2005 to 2006, but the tests will be measuring slightly different things. So any growth report that I would do probably wouldn't be at a student level, but might be at a school or district level because those tests are so very different. Measuring growth, however, does require one other thing for us, and that's a statewide information management system so we can track these kids. And we're starting to get there. We don't have all the pieces in place, but I think we'll be able to do growth by 2007.
Assistant Commissioner, Dr. Vensickel, thank you very much for your testimony today. As I said at the beginning of this hearing, this whole realm of assessment is a major policy piece we need to continue to discuss and talk about and tweak. It's very important in a policy committee to have this hearing. I think your presentation was well done, and I thank you. At this time, we're going to move on to people who have asked to testify, so I'm going to ask that Dr. Larry Gray from the University of Minnesota come to the University of Minnesota come to the table, and as he does, Representative Walsh.
Mr. Chair, just one question before they leave.
Dr. Vensickel or Assistant Commissioner Olson?
I wonder if the department could explain the coordination between the testing and our colleges of education, both private and public. Yeah. How are the teachers who are graduating from our colleges of education at the private and public institutions in Minnesota. This probably is a poor way to phrase it, being indoctrinated in this so they can use it effectively in the public school system.
Dr. Vensickle.
I'm not positive I'm going to that I understood the question, but let me try to answer it this way, Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative. Schools, colleges of education train teachers in various ways. It's certainly not the Department of Ed's place to tell them how to do that. Every one of those has something about assessment and pedagogy and cognition. How each of those teachers get that is beyond the scope of what I am able to control. But I know there are coursework in all of those things. I don't know that that addresses the specific question.
Representative,
well, Mr. Chair, thank you. I think I have the answer. There is no coordination between the department and our colleges of education. Thank you.
Assistant Commissioner Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have recently become involved with the P16 committee. Previously, the assessment division was not representative on that committee. I have recently been appointed also so that we can start a dialogue. You're right, there has not been communication previously, and that is definitely something we need to work on, and we realize that, and we'll be continuing to improve in that area.
Thank you. Dr. Gray, welcome to the committee. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Lawrence Gray, head of the math department at the University of Minnesota. I've been engaged in K-12 math issues for roughly 3 years, fairly heavily engaged, and there has been a lot of concern lately expressed about the proposed test specifications, and it's my understanding that I'm here to give my perspective on those proposed test specifications and revisions in those. And because there are a number of individuals who are sort of paying careful attention to what I have to say about those, I prepared some written remarks. This goes against my usual grain, but I have a copy here that I can leave also as well, because I probably won't be able to get through all of them. But
yeah, I'll ask the page to pass those up.
I just have one copy, so this,
if the page could bring it,
this is for your, you can use it how you will, but. I'd like to start with just a little bit of a overview of the last 2 years in this, because it will be important to kind of understand where I'm coming from. 2 years ago, Commissioner Yecke assembled 40 people to write the new Minnesota State Math Standards. It was a very intense process, somewhat controversial. The final product was carefully worked out balance, and I want to emphasize that, a balance between what might be considered two sides of math education, a conceptual side and a computational side. And there was surprisingly broad acceptance of the final product. Although there was plenty of input from the 40 people on the Standards Committee, the final version was written by 6 people who worked under an extremely tight deadline, I might add. I was one of those 6 people, along with Ellen Delaney, Barb Stofflett, Lisa Covington Clarkson, Nancy Nutting, and Ellen Hurley. 3 of these are current or former K-12 teachers, 2 of them university professors, and 1 represented parents on that group. All of us at that time expressed a willingness to participate in the next critical stage, which was the development of test specifications. We realized that we would be needed to sometimes to interpret what was intended in the standards, even though we tried to make them as clear as possible. And I was under the clear impression at that time that a commitment was made to me and to others that we would be consulted in that process. In the latter half of September 2004, a draft of the proposed test specifications for math MCAs was made public. This was the first time that I had a chance to see what had been happening. In particular, I was not consulted during the production of that draft. I was extremely concerned when it became apparent to me that the proposed test specifications were significantly out of alignment with the standards that we had written 18 months earlier. Within a week or two, I met with Commissioner Segrin and staff from the Department of Education. In my view, that particular meeting did not go very well, but I had a follow-up meeting with Commissioner Segrin in which she called for patience while the period of public feedback was going on. In the end, this feedback period was much longer than originally announced. It appears that in the interim, staff from the Department of Education and some volunteers from K-12, including Ellen Delaney and Bart Stofflett, were hard at work producing a revision of that original draft. January 12th of this year, I had the first chance to look at the latest revision. I was pleasantly surprised to see that significant improvements had been made, and the commissioner seemed genuinely anxious that the test specifications be in alignment with the standards. Since then, the Department of Education has been very cooperative with me. I've had a chance to thoroughly study the revised drafts. This has resulted in a large number of questions that I had, which I've discussed at length with the MDE staff and with Ellen Delaney. There's a lot left to be done, but it appears to me that MDE is working in good faith to bring about alignment where possible. Promises have been made to me to address several of my concerns. In other cases, reasonable explanations were given as to why things were the way they are. I'm optimistic about the final outcome, but I cannot be definitive in my level of support until I see the end result, because there's still much to do on this. I'd like to say a few words about what were the issues as far as alignment is concerned. There were two main issues as far as alignment is concerned, and there's also another issue. The first issue was in the percentages that were stated in the September draft. Those percentages determine how many items are tied to each of the benchmarks in the standards. And I noticed that they were skewed away from the more computational benchmarks towards the more conceptual benchmarks. In particular, in the algebra strand, grades 9 through 11, there was a significant shift in one direction. In that strand, there are 5 benchmarks in what you might call the sort of conceptual half. There are 12 benchmarks in what you might call the computational half. Yet the test specifications had indicated that 70% of the items for that strand be devoted to the conceptual side with 5 benchmarks, and that only 30% be devoted to the other side. Since that other side contains a significant part of the items that are also tested on entrance exams for secondary, both at community colleges and at the University of Minnesota and state colleges, I was very concerned that this would imply a large gap between what we were expecting at the high school level and what we expect at the college level. So that was one difficulty. It appeared at several places throughout those percentages, but that was one of the more dramatic ones. There are also some calculator issues in this, which percentage of problems were calculator related and which ones weren't. But there was another issue that I ran into, and that regarded individual benchmarks. In many cases, content limits were imposed that I felt significantly weakened those particular benchmarks. And in some cases, they were so severe that they made the benchmark almost meaningless at that point. And so those were my concerns. In addition to those, there were a number of errors in the test specifications that had nothing to do with alignment. They just had to do with the fact, I think, that everybody's working under a very tight deadline on a very complex process. I don't think you can really appreciate how complex this is when everything has to be made consistent from one year to the next, and there are so many different requirements that are imposed on these test specifications. I can now report on these issues. In the latest draft, the percentages seem to be in better alignment with the standards throughout. And I believe the calculator issue will also be satisfactorily resolved, although there are some tricky issues at grades 9 through 11 that I haven't had a chance to discuss yet. Also, I still need to see exactly how the current percentages, which as I say are very much more in alignment, how those will be translated into item counts, into individual test item counts, because the percentages are at the level of substrands and the item counts will be at the level of benchmarks. And so there's still something that I'd like to look at there before I'm completely comfortable. On the second source of alignment and concerning content limits, I've had a chance to discuss all of these individual items in detail with the MDE staff and with Ellen Delaney, and we have at least come to some sort of understanding in each case. And it will be very important for me to see the final version, but again, I'm optimistic that this will be something that we can live with. There's certain promises were made and certain understandings were reached that I think I can be comfortable with. Finally, on the matter of errors that are there, I've expressed a willingness to help out in any way that I can to help correct those errors, and I think the Department of Education is willing to have me help out in that that purpose to go through. There's a large number of them, and it just will take a little time to get through and get those things corrected. Finally, I'd like to just make two recommendations, and then be happy to take questions. I believe that much of the tension during the past few months, and there was considerable tension, if you're not aware of it, there certainly was a lot of groups and individuals quite concerned. I think that could have been greatly alleviated if I or someone like me had been consulted during the writing of the September draft of the test specifications. I understand that a large number of K-12 teachers were consulted, and that two members of the six-person standards writing committee, Ellen Delaney and Barb Stoffert, were heavily involved as well. I value their expertise. I understand what Dr. Van Sickle is saying about what they bring to this and how crucial it is. I'm not arguing that university professors should somehow take over this process. But we do bring a different perspective that's vital to the process. The relationship between mathematics and K-12 and mathematics at the college level is critical. And we happen to have a number of university-level mathematicians who have been deeply engaged in this process for some time that we can call upon. My other recommendation has to do with the fact that we seem to always be working under a tight deadline in this process. Once the test specifications are completed this time around, we have a chance to step back and look at the whole picture. In retrospect, it is clear that the standards would have been written differently if we had known more about the process of writing test specifications. The actual content in the standards would not have changed, although a few items might have been moved around a little bit. But certain things would have been done differently. I give an example here, but people want to know it, they can ask me about that. I think some refining and polishing could be done between now and whenever the next deadline is that everybody will be scurrying around to meet, and it's the time to get started on that. We could make some real improvements, and I think help the process along.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Gray. We have a couple of brief questions, and then we'll move on to our next testifiers. Representative Sikor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Professor, I'm so sorry. I missed your name when you were introduced.
Larry Gray.
Mr. Gray. Thank you, Professor Gray. I have essentially two questions. First of all, this is a simple one. You know, what do you think should be the proper definition between questions that deal with concepts and those with computation? And secondly, since I'm not a psychometrician, I don't think any of us here are, give me an idea of how some of the questions that were proposed were weakening the benchmarks. Can you just give me an example of that?
Dr. Gray. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the first question, I think the right word is balance, that we recognized in the when we wrote the standards that there should be a balance between conceptual standards and computational standards. Often there has been a war going on that says, no, we need to be, you know, focused strictly on one or on the other. I don't think our process has shown that, that's going to work, that we go one way or the other. And we worked out a very careful balance. And the current percentages that are now being proposed in the most recent drafts, I think, preserve that balance. Roughly a 50-50 balance. In some grades, it's going to be more one way or the other, depending on individual items. But, roughly you're going to see that. And your second question was to give an example of weakening of standards. Now you require me to get fairly mathematical. But if I can sort of come up with one off the top of my head, there are a number of benchmarks that refer to facility with what we call grouping and ordering operations, which have to do at the lower grades with how you do arithmetic and what you can do and what you can't do with the plus signs and minus signs and grouping terms together or breaking them apart. At the higher grades, it becomes parentheses and variables and things like that that really lead into or are essential for algebra. And there's something called the distributive law that's a part of this. And it's in some ways the critical property of in algebra and arithmetic of this sort. Once you take that out, it's possible to say a lot of verbiage still and not have much left. And so we had a lot of discussion about that, about what's the appropriate grade level to introduce that and what are the appropriate kinds of problems. And in some cases, what had happened is that particular law was excluded from the standard, even though it was, or from the benchmark, even though it was originally in there. And what was left didn't have much left to test on. And so we had a lot of discussions about that, and I think I learned some things as far as what is grade level appropriate and how this particular property is introduced. And I hope they also learned some things about what happens when you take that out and what's left over and whether it's even appropriate then to talk about test questions at that point.
Thank you, Professor.
Representative Carlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Gray, I don't have a question, but I just wanted to thank you for coming and your frankness, and I'm happy that you were aggressive enough to get involved and have resolved a lot of these things. Otherwise, I would have a lot of questions for the department, but I think you already struggled through that. But I am dismayed that you had to go through that, because a lot of us, as we went through this controversial process for standards, were threatening to hire the math committee for all the standards, just because you worked it out, and with a lot of controversy that always swirls around math. And so I thank you for your role in that, as well as getting a handle on this so we don't have something controversial splashing back to us when we do always seem to be in such a hurry. And I think if you were here earlier, there was concern expressed on the part of one legislator that a lot of us share with you about that pace that we seem to always be under.
It was from the chair, Representative Grayling. Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Gray. At this time, I'm going to ask that few members from EdWatch come forward. Kathy Green, who is the chair, Austin School Board. Ms. Green, if you could come forward. Ms. Ellen Hurley, who's on EdWatch Standards Committee, if you could come forward. All right. And Ms. Quist. All right, if you could all come to the table together, please.
Right. I'm Catherine Green, Chairman.
Welcome to the committee. Please give us your testimony.
Members of the committee, I was asked by EdWatch to come. They are aware that I've been very involved with this from the start. My name is Kathy Green. I'm chairperson of the Austin School Board. I've been on the school board for 5 years, 2 years as chair, prior to that 10 years on the Curriculum Advisory Committee. I have been following testing standards since the early 90s. In 2003, I also served on the Minnesota Standards Committee to develop math standards for grades 9 through 12. More importantly, I'm a parent with 4 sons currently attending public schools in our fine state. The issue before you today is of utmost importance. It is imperative that our state test specifications align with the state academic standards adopted by our state legislature. The implications reach into the classroom throughout the state and across the kitchen tables of our families. Testing of standards is what drives educational decisions in districts statewide. Since 1998, the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments, MCAs, have caused frustration and bewilderment. Districts have administered them faithfully, waited for months for results whose timeliness were of little or no use, only to have the data in many cases act as a bludgeon to hardworking educational efforts. Time and again since 1999, when the Achieve Report measuring up deemed the MCAs lacking in value because they were not aligned clearly with the standards of the state's profile of learning. Our teachers have been preparing our students for a moving target with blindfolds on. Each year, the tests have changed without a clear indication of what would be tested. Stress levels of administrators, teachers, and students as the test approach is stifling. The pressures have been counterproductive to leading precious resources to narrowing the achievement gaps. What I'm talking about today is practicality at the district level and in the classroom level when the assessments are being creative. A lot of times I think there's such a distance, and in fact the Achieve Report mentioned that when that was presented many years ago, that the actions here in the legislature is so far removed from the actual classroom. We are at a crossroads where the expensive assessments that are being developed can truly measure the standards as written. Our district has purchased textbooks already and curriculum aligned with the standards in math. Our educators are doing an outstanding job teaching to the standards. In good faith, our district should now be presented with assessment tools that test to the standards. I have had serious concerns with the draft specifications that were released this fall. Dr. Gray has clearly and comprehensively compared and contrasted the alignment of the drafts as well as doing analysis of what assessments should contain. And I truly believe that he and his peers deserve a huge round of applause and thank you from the state of Minnesota for the classroom children for math in the state of Minnesota. He and they have done a wonderful job. When test specifications do not align with specific substance and spirit of the state-adopted standards, then the ideology of test specifications become your standards for the classroom, circumventing the standards development and legislative process. The Austin School Board, in presenting its legislative initiatives for 2005, included urging the state to require alignment of state test specifications and test questions with the adopted state curriculum standards. Get the test and our teachers all on the same track so that we can be working together rather than trying to spin our wheels to catch up. It is time to support our district's teachers and students with assessment tools that enhance their efforts to prepare for success. I thank you very much for giving me this opportunity, Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Green. Ms. Quist.
Thank you, Chairman. Members of the House Education Policy Committee, I just wanted to correct the record that we did ask Kathy Green and Ellen Hurley if they would like to testify, but they aren't associated with EdWatch. Thank you for conducting this hearing and providing the opportunity for us to bring our concerns to you. When Minnesota adopted the profile of learning in the mid-90s, it also adopted a new approach to teaching math. This new approach is called integrated math, new math, constructivist math, and other things. Critics sometimes call it postmodern math. This constructivist math is in contrast to traditional math, also referred to as computational math. Teaching computational skills were replaced with discovery learning, an overemphasis on group projects, non-directed learning, and a reliance on calculators. Social studies themes such as environmentalism, population growth, multiculturalism, and the like were also integrated into the math curriculum. EdWatch has been deeply engaged in the battle against integrated math curriculum in the schools in Minnesota since we began as Maple River Education Coalition in 1998. We've worked tirelessly on behalf of parents all over the state who waged battles and are still waging them against integrated math curriculum in their schools. Their kids are just not learning math. As an example, I have brought along a statement from one YZ parent who wanted to be here to testify today in person. Her story is replicated 1,000 times over from parents over the state, and that should be included in the handout you received. In fact, the same math wars battle is occurring in every state. Back in 1999, over 200 outraged mathematicians and scientists, including four Nobel Prize winners, signed an open letter to the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Education asking him to withdraw the department's recommendations and promotion of integrated math programs. It has been a long and difficult battle. The Minnesota legislature repealed the profile of learning in 2003, one reason being that constructivist math was proving to be a disaster. In 2003, the Minnesota legislature adopted new math standards. These standards removed most integrated math from the state requirements and substituted traditional math in its place, and now Dr. Gray has said that it's about 50-50. That's a substantial difference from what it was prior to the new standards. The repeal of the profile and all it represented was applauded and supported by Republicans, Democrats, liberals, and conservatives alike. In spite of the new academic standards, however, and in spite of the profile's repeal, the guidelines developed for the new math standards were based on the integrated math, the old profile math, rather than on the traditional math. In fact, we discovered that the committee appointed by the Minnesota Department of Education to write the guidelines did not include a single individual representing the traditional approach to math. The people of Minnesota want to know how this happened. How can new tests be written properly by a group who support the profile standards? And why was no one who supported the traditional math and who opposed the profile math included? The parents and citizens of Minnesota have reason to feel betrayed by this process. Hard-fought elections have been won and lost over the profile of learning. Thousands of people across the state were involved for many years in working for its repeal. Laws finally passed by Minnesota's elected representatives and signed by our governor ought to have settled the matter. Modifications are now finally being made to the guidelines only because someone blew the whistle. What assurance can parents and taxpayers now have that the test questions themselves will be aligned with the new framework? Will supporters of traditional math be included in that process, or will only believers in integrated math and the old profile standards be appointed as reviewers? We urge this committee to assure the people of Minnesota and the Minnesota Department of that the Minnesota Department of Education's Assessment Advisory Committee, those appointed to review the new assessments, be composed of people who reflect the philosophy of the new standards in math, language arts, and science that were signed into law, rather than the philosophy of the repealed profile of learning. We urge you to restore confidence in the lawmaking process so that citizens may know that elections matter, that their votes matter, because laws that are passed and signed by the governor will actually be enforced. Thank you very much for your...
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Quist, and a good reminder to the members of this committee. One of the things I thought was most interesting when I first talked to Dr. Gray was the whole relationship between what we do as legislators when it comes to education, especially in the realm of assessments, and what can eventually occur at the school district level where the rubber hits the road. And so having that discussion and dialogue, having this issue brought forward, I think opened my eyes to some incredible, not only policy statements that we make here, but how important it is, as Representative Greiling mentioned, that we do have citizens out there watching as the development of the policies become reality to the citizens, and I thank you for your work. We have one other testifier, and it's is the name pronounced Ms. Hurley?
Yes.
All right. We have your written testimony, Ms. Hurley, and we have about 2 minutes. So,
2 minutes. Oh, gee. Well, I don't think
if you could sum up what you've written and just give us a feel for what your thoughts are. I see you're a member of the Minnesota Academic Standard Committee, so please.
Yes, and I was, as Larry, Dr. Gray mentioned, I was also on the final writing committee also. So I've been involved in this for the last 2.5 years. We moved here from Ohio. My children entered schools here in Minnesota in the fall of 2002. So this is when I became more aware of what was going on in the schools, and was basically disappointed ever since. Recently, my husband and I made the decision to remove our fourth grade son from his regular math class so that he can progress at his own pace with a more rigorous and comprehensive math education.
Ms. Hurley, we can read that.
Okay. All right. Basically, what led to us doing that was basically the lack of rigor and the lack of comprehensive math education that he was receiving in the schools in Eden Prairie. And unfortunately, I think that the concept of that Dr. Gray emphasized that there needed to be a balance between concepts and computation has been reemphasized to me as I have been working with my son for the last 2 months in the library on his own. I've been working with him. And what happens is when he is working and learning both, each reinforces the other. And it reinforces, and he actually, what happens is he's able to learn the computation part, that helps him see his own progress. The conceptual part helps him learn the computation. So they must be integrated together. Those two need to be there both. And it can't be concepts only. And unfortunately, the Eden Prairie School District, from direction, maybe possibly from the previous, the Children, Family, and Learning CFL department, possibly, I don't know what led them to go down the path that they had gone down, but they do emphasize the conceptual far more significantly than they do computation. And as a result of that, there's just, it's very troubling to see that what he was coming back, you know, from the things that were coming back, they just aren't comprehensive. It's not comprehensive in what he needs to learn, and it was not going to comply with the standards. But also, the other important aspect of this is, as an aware parent, I was on the standards committee. I knew, and I have my daughter went through fourth grade in Ohio, so I was also aware of what other states are doing, what other countries are doing, Singapore math, other curriculums are doing, and what they can get kids to learn at certain age groups. So it's not, most parents aren't aware, nearly as aware, and they haven't been following this, and they haven't lived in other states, and they haven't lived in other communities or anything like that. So they don't know what's possible. And I was more aware of that, and so I was able to come in and just make this decision to do this for my son. But unfortunately, many parents aren't in that position. So that's the other critical part, is how much awareness from parents is out there as to what's really going on. And plus, parents that are aware are heavily supplementing their children's education through tutoring. So that's also skewing the results that you might see on NCAs and things like that. So those kinds of influences are out there, but that also contributes to the learning gaps that we see in the state, and I think that that's an important aspect of this whole issue.
I appreciate your testimony, and I appreciate the work you do in keeping an eye out on what's happening up here in St. Paul. I think it's real important work. Members of the committee, this committee stands adjourned.